Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. The Missouri Legislature convenes tomorrow for the start of the 2014 legislative session. As usual, some very high-profile issues face the lawmakers, some of which have been before them in past sessions. Certain to generate a lot of debate, taxes and tax credits, Medicaid expansion, the school transfer issue, the usual array of hot-button social issues, and much more. I'm Don Marsh. Joining me in studio to talk about the session and what we might expect from it, Joe Manis is political reporter for the St. Louis Public Radio and The Beacon. Terry Jones is the Founders Professor of Political Science and Public Policy Administration at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. And we also have with us Jason Rosenbaum of St. Louis Public Radio and The Beacon. Thank you all so much for being with us.
Thank
you. Nice to be here.
Well, here we go again. Doesn't time fly by when we're having so much fun? Terry, let me begin with you. We'll talk some general issues before we get into specifics. What are you looking for from this session? What do you expect from it?
I think it's going to be largely, although not completely, a sequel from the 2013. Many of the issues that surfaced then have not been settled. And they will resurface in the coming session. Issues like a transportation tax and what to do with our transportation infrastructure, the size of government, the amount of money that we're going to spend on K-12 and higher education, the form of our tax structure, income versus sales, all of those issues which were prominent a year ago will be prominent this year.
Joe Manis, we have the Republican majority still. And it's a supposedly a veto-proof majority, although that wasn't necessarily the case.
On the Senate side. Right now, it's not on the House side because, and Jason and I have both written about this, Jason most recently, there are several House vacancies that the governor has not called elections for. So the result is that right now there are 108 Republicans in the House, which is one short of a veto-proof. So, and there actually has been a lawsuit filed because the governor has not called special elections, not just for the House seat, but also there's a vacant Senate seat. But this is some of the behind-the-scenes machinations that can actually have a big impact on public policy.
How so?
Well, because if you don't have a veto-proof Republican majority, even if all the Republicans are in line in the House, and that's rarely the case— when you've got such a big majority, it's kind of like herding cats, regardless of party. But it's you can't make 109. It means you got to get at least one defecting Democrat. And while that happens occasionally, it's difficult, and it would depend on the issue. Now, I personally think that this session is going to be a little different from the last one for two reasons. One is because of the transfer issue, which really didn't – the school transfer controversy – in St. Louis County and in St. Charles County, which really didn't erupt until right at the end of the session. So it really didn't become an issue during the session. But what I've been told is that this is probably going to be one of the first issues that, at least on the Senate side, that they deal with. At least nine of the area state senators, Republicans and Democrats, have been meeting to try to come up with a bipartisan solution. They kind of want to bring a little bit of that feel-good spirit they had during the Boeing special session, even though that didn't work out. But it did create some good feelings, so they want to try to at least carry that over, at least a little bit in the beginning. The other thing is the 2014 elections. They didn't have the election last year. They were, you know, after the 2012. So now you've got a lot of House members who are looking at running for the Senate. You've got some Senate members who are term limited, figuring out what they're going to do in 2016. You've got several people in the Senate who already have announced or are expected to for 2016. You've got State Auditor Tom Schweik, who is running for reelection this fall, but who also is expected to perhaps be encouraged to run for governor in 2016. You got the Attorney General, Chris Koster, who was the preeminent politician in Jefferson City right now, a Democrat who is running for governor. And there's going to be a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, influence that those two men, Schweik and Koster, will have, I think, over some of the legislation or at least actions.
Okay, we'll come back to some of the points you've raised, but I want to bring Jason Rosenbaum into the discussion. What sort of a session are you looking at, Jason?
There might be this assumption that the session is not going to be terribly productive because it's an election year. But if recent precedent actually does shine through, there have been instances where election years have actually bred very important legislation. In 2010, for example, they made wholesale changes to the state's pension system and created a tax credit for automobile manufacturing in the special session of that year. In 2008, they passed a pretty broad-based immigration bill in the waning days of session. In 2006, they managed to pass eminent domain legislation. And there was also some fairly important legislation that was passed in 2012, but those instances are particularly impactful. I think that the transfer issue is going to be a major and compelling issue that goes throughout the session. Whether they're able to find consensus on that remains to be seen, because there's always this clash, so to speak, between, you know, educators, administrators, and the quote-unquote education establishment, as they're derisively called, and proponents of quote-unquote school choice, of vouchers, of changing teacher tenure or voucher-like programs. So it remains to be seen if that issue managed to get consensus. But if recent precedent comes through and there's a lot of pressure to do something on that issue, that might be the thing that ends up actually getting done.
Terry Jones, as a member of the education establishment.
Very far down within the hierarchy.
I'm talking about the K-12 education establishment. I'm saying that somewhat tongue-in-cheek.
I know, but I couldn't resist that, Jason. Your thoughts about that, this transfer issue. Do you think it's going to be a prolonged, drawn-out thing?
Well, to the extent that it gets drawn into a wholesale discussion of education reform, vouchers, tax credits, teacher tenure, it's going to be very difficult to solve the transfer issue or even to make progress in terms of something that is a narrow approach to it, such as limiting the amount that the sending districts have to provide to the receiving districts, giving the receiving districts some control over how many students they have to accept and under what conditions they have to accept them. Certainly the superintendents, the establishment, as Jason has referred to them, have already worked out what they think the ideal solution is from their perspective, but they don't want it entangled in these larger matters like teacher tenure and school vouchers.
But, you know, the spotlight is really on the legislature, it seems to me, to get something done, and as Joe suggested, maybe get it done quickly and have this kumbaya feeling, at least at the at the beginning of the session, simply because people are really ticked off that this has not been addressed.
They are, but there's a game of bluff that occurs in the legislature because it's time limited. The Constitution says it has to end in a certain date in May, and trying to drive the best possible bargain in turn encourages people on both or whatever side you have, sometimes there's more than two of them, to draw it out until the very end, and then bang, at the very end it doesn't work out and we're back to square one.
Joe?
Well, I think it sort of depends. At least in the Senate, there really is an effort going on to try to make it, quote, a clean transfer bill. There have been at least six different bills that have been submitted that are all very similar by these six of the nine, as I mentioned, who have been having these meetings regularly, which in itself is rather intriguing. In other words, you've got Brian Nieves in the same room with Maria Chappelle Nadal. So you've got people from both sides of the political spectrum who are trying to come up with something. And there is a little bit more of a rural interest because there's some rural school districts who are also in facing possible accreditation problems. So you've got some of their neighboring districts who are beginning to see that this, quote, urban suburban issue could affect them. So you've got some rural legislators who are concerned about. But on the House side, I think that Professor Jones has a point. House Speaker Tim Jones, who I talked to a couple weeks ago, he has a broad education agenda of things he would like to do. He's been taking aim at teacher tenure off and on for several years. By the way, this is his last session. He's widely expected to run for some sort of statewide office in 2016. So you've got all this affecting how people are looking at stuff. So Jones has made some comments that indicate that he may try to link it to some of these broader issues, which then sets up the case where you've got the Senate and the House squabbling over how broad of this.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how much of an influence, Jason, public opinion will have on this, though, because people around here, obviously, and in Kansas City, are really concerned about what's going on and the amount of money that's being spent wrestling with this thing.
I think that's a good point. I think you saw, for example, when Riverview and Normandy transfer situation was kind of starting up, that hundreds of people from the receiving districts came out to express some support but mainly opposition to this. And the fact that this could also be happening in Kansas City relatively soon, and that's, you know, a whole different ecosystem, I think will definitely compel legislators on the Kansas City side to come up with some sort of solution. I think that the real ticking time bomb, so to speak, is St. Louis City Schools, because right now St. Louis City Schools has provisional accreditation, which means that people who live in the city with children aren't affected by this law. But if you saw the scores that came up from that district, they're teetering very close to unaccreditation. It might not happen immediately, but if that does happen and the status quo remains, then you're going to have a much bigger flow of students into those county districts than Riverview or Normandy. And it's going to be a sight to behold, as I've said before. And, you know, I think that will probably be the biggest pressure of all.
Terry, I gather from what I've read, and I think, Joe, you've probably written about it, and perhaps Jason as well. Governor Nixon, because the state has a little more money at his disposal than maybe had thought it would have, is making education one of his priorities. And we'll hear more about that on the 21st when he makes his State of the State address. This is a big deal for education in Missouri, isn't it?
Yeah, the governor's been doing that ever since he led the fight to resist the override of his veto of the tax cut legislation in 2013, making the point that the state is already low tax, low service. Low taxes are a way of attracting a business, we're already there. We need to make sure that our educational system is a sound one. And also pointing out that the K-12 education formula is about $600 million underfunded by the agreement of the legislature several years ago to fully fund it. And so he's proposing in a little better economic climbs to come closer to and over a couple of years fully fund that formula. Mm-hmm.
Joe, what's at stake for Governor Nixon in this session? His time is coming to an end.
Well, although he's got 3 years, it's sort of like he just won re-election a year ago. He's got sort of in the same position as President Barack Obama. They all of a sudden take office and everybody's looking at who's going to be mm-hmm. next.
Yeah.
So he is trying to create a little bit of a legacy for himself, in part because it's unclear what the governor's going to do in 2016. He can't run for re-election. There's always some speculation that since he lost twice before for the U.S. Senate, that he might consider challenging Senator Roy Blunt if Roy Blunt runs for re-election in 2016. Others don't think that's the case. As I mentioned before, there are some who think that the governor may have higher aspirations, maybe not for president, but to be on the short list for vice president, maybe to get a cabinet position in a Hillary Clinton administration. He's already endorsed her. So there's all this stuff. So he's trying to make himself in some ways look a little more Democratic, because Nixon is a moderate Democrat and is conservative on some things. But he has been trying in the last year or so on certain issues to make clear that, yes, I am a Democrat. So he's been trying to reinforce his alliances with labor and doing some other things to try to – and this isn't just for his state credentials. This is for his national credentials.
And, Jason, if he can prove to be an effective governor, certainly in a second term in a conservative state working with a Republican legislature – that would certainly burnish his credentials for 2016 if he chose that route Joe's just talked about.
It's going to be tough. I mean, one of the challenges for Governor Nixon since he entered office was that even if he had these grandiose ideas of how he wanted to change government, he always had to temper those with the fact that he had a Republican legislature, which has gotten more Republican as years have gone by. Now, I think that he's been able to succeed by kind of grasping on to some bills that Republicans support. The aforementioned pension bill in 2010 was a major change that was championed by a lot of Republicans. And, you know, Illinois had been dealing with that for years, but Missouri managed to tackle that pretty early. So I think that's going to probably be where his successes lie. And as far as 2016 goes, I think publicly he's already swore off a Senate bid, but I mean, it's pretty early. He can always change his mind. And, you know, I think if Hillary runs, since he's already endorsed him, I think that pretty much knocks him out of the hypothetical presidential race. But a cabinet position is not out of the question if Hillary ends up winning. So,
right. And we need to continue to remind ourselves that Governor Nixon has been playing Missouri politics. He's the veteran. He's been in elected office in Missouri since 1986, over 25 years. So one of the benefits of term limits on the other side from the legislature, from the governor's standpoint, is he's playing a game that he's been doing well for a long time against people who are newer at it.
Absolutely.
And he's still young.
Yes, yes. He's not. He's younger than I am. He tells me that periodically, too.
But he's still very tall, by
yes,
the way.
Yeah, right. But he is one of, I want to reinforce this. He's one of the few Democratic governors from the Midwest. So when the Democrats nationally are looking at stuff, and sometimes they tend to forget that presidential elections are generally won or lost in the Midwest. And so I really do think that Nixon will have a higher national stature than some think because he is among a few, very right. few.
Got to take a break. That's Joe Manis of St. Louis Public Radio on The Beacon. She is with me in studio, as is Terry Jones, political scientist from the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Also with us in studio from St. Louis Public Radio and The Beacon, Jason Rosenbaum. We'll come back in a moment and continue our conversation about the Missouri legislative session, which gets underway tomorrow. It will run through May. We'll talk about that, and we'll bring you into the conversation at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. You can reach us through Facebook, and you can send us a tweet if you like at STL on Air. Back in a moment, this is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll be continuing our conversation on the Missouri legislative session, which gets underway tomorrow with Jason Rosenbaum and Terry Jones of the University of Missouri, St. Louis, and Joe Manis of St. Louis Public Radio and The Beacon, which is also Jason's affiliation here. But before we do that, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio and The Beacon newsroom is following today. The St. Louis area continues to deal with Sunday's snowstorm and bitter cold temperatures. And while this worst cold snap in nearly two decades is coming to an end, more snow is just around the corner. Many roads remain at least partly covered with snow, but MoDOT officials say warming temperatures should help salt trucks and plows make progress. And a Missouri subcommittee of lawmakers is meeting today in Jefferson City to discuss budget issues related to both Medicaid and K-12 schools. Lawmakers are hearing from the Departments of Health and Senior Services, Mental Health, Elementary and Secondary Education, and Social Services. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation. As part of those headlines, we talked about Medicaid. Medicaid expansion is certainly going to be one of the big issues to be dealt with this year, as it was last year. Terry Jones, are we going to have a bill and expand Medicaid in Missouri this year?
No. I think the odds are very much against it, even though there's pressure from both the business sector as well as the health sector to do that. And even though a case can be made, a very sound economic case, that it's good economic development for the state, and even though now Missouri tax dollars are going to other states to support health care, despite all of those situations, a strong majority of the Republicans who control both houses of the Missouri General Assembly are no way about anything that's going to even look like they favor Obamacare.
Joe, even though it's free money.
Well, because to them it's not free money. The Republicans long have had a philosophical opposition to this. Part of it's on financial grounds because they don't believe that the federal government can sustain. Missouri's expansion of Medicaid would be covered by the federal government for 3 years and then at least 90% thereafter. They just don't see where the federal government's going to have the money to sustain that for all 50 states. And so they suspect that the states would be ending up on the hook at some point. Then you also have just the general philosophical argument. Republicans as a rule, not everybody, but the Republicans as a rule have opposed the idea of government involvement, even if it's via private sector, which is the way the exchanges are, and it was originally a Republican idea. They don't think government should be involved in health care, period. I mean, and it's not just healthcare. I mean, there's some Republicans who don't think government should be involved in education. I mean, there's a number of issues, but they see healthcare right now as the Bunker Hill, and they're going to fight to keep or to push back, you know, the gains that have been made with the Democrats getting the Affordable Care Act passed almost 4 years ago now, and the fact that a lot of it's now going into effect the last couple months. And I think they're hoping that public sentiment will come to their side and could help them roll back some of this stuff within the next year. But for Missouri, the upshot is There'll be some talk about it, but I don't think there's going to be any action on it.
Jason?
Well, you know, as a reporter, I feel like this is deja vu all over again, to quote Yogi Berra. I hope I'm actually quoting the right person there.
You are.
Since 2005, when Missouri Republicans and then-Governor Matt Blunt made pretty steep cuts to Medicaid, there have been efforts over the years to expand Medicaid to certain points, mainly by Democrats. And every year it's been shot down in the legislature. And I don't really see much outward pressure for the Republicans to change course. If you look at the trajectory of how many House and Senate seats the Republicans have had since that time, they did lose some seats in 2006. And in 2008, they gained Senate seats and kind of stabilized in the House seats. And then since then, they have supermajorities. So I'm not really convinced that there has been enough public pressure via the ballot box to have them change their minds, because their majorities have grown.
Yeah, and it's a red state, and it's an election year, and Obamacare is anathema to Republicans over most of the country.
I think if they can just, you know, say we're against the Affordable Care Act, that just feeds to their base.
And they would be inviting a primary challenge if they did something for Medicaid.
It's the same story in microcosm here as it is in Washington, and the people who run for office from Washington. We're starting to get some phone calls. Joe, did you want to say something on this?
Well, redistricting has kind of reinforced some of this. The redistricting of the House and Senate seats have made them more polarized, because while technically, like you say, in some ways Missouri is a red state as far as the legislature, but if you look statewide, we're more purple. I mean, the Democrats hold all but two.
But if you look at the way they voted in national elections recently, it's
correct.
Correct. Let's take a couple of phone calls before we get on to some of the other issues that are important to the state. We'll bring in Joe calling from Rock Hill. He'll bring up an issue that we definitely want to talk about. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi. Thanks, folks, for taking the call. I have a general question about school tenure with the legislature. But before I'd like to go to that, I'd like to ask if there was any effort made to include someone from the St. Louis American on this panel. I seldom hear from perspectives that are not the usual upper middle class aging white population that I'm a part of.
That ouch.
And I'm sorry, I really thought these people are very smart and very thoughtful and very well qualified to be on the air. This is not meant as a personal statement about anybody. I'm a mid-50s white guy, so, you know, these are my people in some respect. But it just would be nice if there were more variety on KWMU when it comes to these kind of programs. As a member, I'm making that request out loud.
Joe, thanks for doing so. And we certainly are listening to you, and we appreciate your thoughts. But let's move along to a question or comment, please. Joe?
I'm making that request out loud.
You'd better turn down your radio, Joe. You're getting some feedback. Do you want to make...
So here's my question. How much... Outside Missouri support is being put behind, or how much outside of Missouri pressure is being put on the state legislature to make teacher tenure an issue?
Joe, thanks for the call.
Outside, I'm not so sure, but inside, there's quite a bit. Rex Singfeld, the retired financier, who I think splits time between mid-Missouri and St. Louis area, he just recently put about $750,000 into a PAC that would take that issue statewide. Now, he's been the most prolific donor by far over the last 5 or 6 years. But as far as his influence goes in the legislature, it's kind of mixed, because there are some Republicans who very much agree with his agenda on taxes, education, whatnot, and there are some who just frankly don't. And oftentimes, he's put a lot of money and effort into some issues, especially the education ones, only for the legislature to kind of back away from them. So I'm not really sure if that's going to change this year.
Joe, that's an interesting thought, because he has been very, very active and put a lot of money into this, into the politics in this state. But how successful has he been overall in those issues that are important to him?
Well, I think one of the reasons he's been pouring more money into issues rather than candidates is for that reason, because some of the candidates who he had backed heavily, I'm thinking a couple in 2012 who didn't get elected, However, he's been a longstanding supporter of Chris Coster, the Democrat attorney general who's going to run for governor. So there could be, you know, I mean, Coster has never come out and said he's for or against, you know, some of this stuff, but he's a former Republican. So there's some in the education community who are always wary of him. Now, that said, the whole focus on teacher tenure is a national one. You've got some groups like ALEC and some other national conservative groups who have been targeting teacher tenure and other those types of things for quite a while for a couple reasons. One of them is philosophical. They think that there should be more control over, you know, what teachers are saying or doing. Part of it's political. They feel that teacher tenure has helped create teachers and the teacher unions as a political power base, and they want to go after that. And some of it is that there are some conservative groups who aren't that keen on public education, period, and who would like to see more vouchers, more privatization of education. There's a number of things.
Sure.
What I'm saying is all of this fits in together as they – and so teacher tenure is one of the early targets. And the House Speaker, Tim Jones, as I mentioned before, has been a proponent of doing away with teacher tenure.
Terry, while we're on the subject of Rex Hinkfield, another of the issues that he has been closely associated with in past years has been eliminating the state income tax in favor of a sales tax. I haven't heard much about that recently. Is this something likely to come up this session?
It still will. It will come up in the guise of whether or not there should be any cuts in the taxation of Missouri and then where they should come from. In all likelihood, it will be on the income tax side. And then also it could come up in terms of are there additional goods and services that should be subject to the sales tax, what she would call a consumption tax, or Internet sales and their susceptibility to state taxation. Rex Hinkfield, I think, should be judged in terms of his influence in influencing what we're talking about rather than what we're doing. And he certainly is having an influence on what's on the agenda.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. And while we're talking about taxes, the transportation tax is something that you had alluded to. They're talking about a 1 cent increase in the sales tax for that.
It's a devil's in the details situation. There's consensus in this state that our transportation infrastructure needs substantial improvement. It's out of shape, and it has a ton of deferred maintenance. The details are how to pay for it and where – how to allocate it. And the – what is an age-old chasm in Missouri, the rural-urban split, surfaces more in transportation than I think on any other issue.
Yeah, and I think on that issue in particular, it's an odd bedfellows or strange bedfellow situation because you have Republicans and Democrats who are for that because of what Professor Jones just mentioned. But it also has – you know, very strong bipartisan opposition just because of the idea of putting a 1 cent sales tax into effect for 10 years. Many feel that that would hurt the poor and the elderly on fixed incomes just because it's such a large increase in sales taxes. So I'm not really sure what the future holds up for that. It may end up passing through the legislature and going to the ballot, but I think the more likely route is probably an initiative petition process, and then they'll slug it out in the fall to see if it passes.
I'm going to go to the phones and get to another issue as time starts to slip away from us here. There are a number of things I want to get to, and Jay in Normandy is going to bring up one of them. Go ahead, Jay. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. In the Post-Dispatch recently, they had a give your lump of coal to – or fair and foul, I guess, was actually the description. And there was a pretty good letter to the editor in that talked about the gun issue in the Missouri legislature. You know, these guys are radically overreacting, I guess, is the question or the comment on what President Obama tried to do after Sandy Hook. You know, there were reasonable things that they were trying to do about background checks, limiting magazines, and particularly the open carry is a very, I think, scary proposition. And they would preclude individual cities from, and these guys want to have regulation at the lowest level normally, or state rights. But yet they want to preclude cities from saying, no, you can't have an open carry of a gun. What's going to happen? We caught a big break last year with a couple of senators. how can this thing hopefully get derailed?
Hey, thanks for the call. I think he misspoke when he said Sandy Hook. He's probably talking about Newtown. Sandy Hook being the storm that ravaged New Jersey. Well, what do you think? A number of gun issues come into play, if you will, Joe.
Well, they've been talking about coming up with some sort of bill that may be milder than what was there was a number of bills that were proposed and passed last session, most of which were and the governor vetoed most of them, and they weren't overridden. The most prominent one was the so-called gun nullification bill, which in effect would bar enforcement of any of the federal gun laws. And that's the one that I think the gentleman's referring to, because in the end, in order to prevent an override, because it did get the veto got overridden in the House, was that in the Senate, the two Senate Republican leaders went ahead and voted not to override, to block it, because there was a lot of concern from the law enforcement community. So they're already trying to come up with some sort of milder version. So I think the legislature will probably pass some sort of pro-gun legislation because they need that for the base. But I don't know if it's going to be as extreme as it was last session.
Yeah, and as far as gun control bills, those are usually dead in the water pretty quickly. Background check bills often don't even get sent to committee until like the last day of session. So I think the prognosis on something like that are pretty grim.
Well, one of the issues that the governor vetoed was the so-called nullification law. Which is coming back because Nieves has pre-filed that, hasn't he?
Well, but it's a milder version, as I mentioned. It's not the same. And I think he says that he has tried to take some of the law enforcement concerns into account, and that he's talked to some people. But again, as Jason pointed out, it depends what happens to it. I mean, because there's tons of bills that get filed and nothing happens to them. And so I think it depends on whether or not the legislature, the Republicans probably feel they need to pass something because it's an election year, but it may not be as strong as what went through last time.
Terry, I wonder if there's a supremacy clause issue here nonetheless with this proposal.
It's a very straightforward supremacy clause issue. This is the Republicans playing to their base, so they'll talk about it. They possibly will pass some type of symbolic legislation. The Democrats will mildly oppose and let the courts overrule it. Again, this is part of a sequel. We've gone through this play now many years in Missouri.
Yeah. And last time, if you recall, at the end, one of the key forces in this that prevented override was Attorney General Koster, who put out that letter about right before the veto session, which sort of put the kibosh on it. And he was siding with the law enforcement community. And then there was a series of law enforcement announcements from various groups saying that they were opposed to it. So I think there will be an effort, if there is anything passed, to try to not see a replay of that.
I have to take another break, but before I do so, I want to offer my apology to Jay when I said that he misspoke. In fact, it was I who misspoke. He was speaking of the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, and I was thinking of Hurricane Sandy. So, Jay, my apologies to you. You were right, and I was dead wrong. Back in just a moment to continue our conversation with Jason Rosenbaum, Joe Manis, and Terry Jones as we continue to look at the legislative session, which begins tomorrow in Jefferson City here in Missouri. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again. Welcome back as we continue our conversation about the Missouri legislative session, which begins tomorrow. Before we move on, I just want to read to you a tweet that we've received from Allison saying she'd like to see Medicaid expansion and the passage of the Missouri Non-Discrimination Act, the bill that would expand the Missouri human rights to list ban discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. That's one of the things I wanted to get to very quickly. Does this have any chance at all?
You know, on its face, you would say no, but a really interesting thing happened in the Missouri Senate last year. It was this MONA was attached to another bill, and it actually was voted on, and it actually passed the Missouri Senate, which is usually the biggest obstacle for that to get through legislation to get through. So we'll see if there's momentum from that for next year. Getting it through the House is going to be another matter altogether. But I would say we've been somewhat pessimistic on this program about some things. I wouldn't be as pessimistic about that as some other things just because of what happened last year.
And I agree with Jason about that. The whole scene in terms of sexual orientation and politics and public opinion has changed fairly dramatically over the past few years.
And quickly.
And while Missouri is not a leader in this regard, it's a laggard. It's not a extreme laggard. So I think you're going to see it have a serious chance of being passed, and there certainly is going to be an effort to do that. And even if it does not succeed, it lays the groundwork for doing it in the next session.
Well, it's fairly narrowly drawn, which is one of the reasons it's been able to get some support last time. The bill that got through the Senate last time specifically protected people from discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation at work. I mean, it specifically said, in fact, that, in other words, you couldn't be fired for being gay. And so they've tried to narrowly draw it so that it can't be expanded to include some of the other stuff that gets all people whipped up. And, of course, Missouri does have a constitutional ban against gay marriage. So they wanted to make sure that whatever they have does not conflict with that in order so it would pass through the court. So it's not a broad anti-discrimination bill. It's very narrowly written.
Okay. One more point, Don.
Yes.
This legislation has a champion in the Senate, Senator Justice, and that gives it an added edge if one member of the legislature, particularly a respected member, makes it a high item on his or her agenda. That gives it an added advantage.
Yes.
Let's take another call. Jerry in O'Fallon has been waiting. Jerry, go ahead.
Well, good morning. Thank you, and Happy New Year to everyone.
Likewise.
All we heard last session, and I guess all we're going to hear this session, is how we need to change our tax structure in order to make the state more business-friendly like our neighbors in Kansas. And essentially what that means is, in my interpretation, is transferring more of the tax burden onto individuals. And so you're either going to have reduced services or, as individuals, we'll pay a higher rate of taxes. And, they always use the term creating jobs, and I think it's just demonstrated by this Boeing stunt. We're not creating jobs. We're simply trying to poach jobs that are already somewhere else and giving businesses the upper hand in order to do that. And the same politicians that will say they do not want to expand Medicare because they don't believe in federal spending, again, want us to model ourselves after the state of Kansas, which receives more money in federal funding than it kicks back in federal taxes. So in essence, you're looking at a deficit state making its way by, cutting their taxes and their services and allowing the federal government to come in and pay for more of it.
Jerry, thanks for the call and the comment. Any comment to Jerry's remarks?
Well, just speaking in general, there will be a state. There is a budget fight already underway, which will be connected to this tax cut fight. The governor and the leaders of the state Senate and the state House already have disagreed over projected estimates of increase, how much more the state may take in. Just to dumb it down for listeners, every early December, you got people from the Senate, House, and the governor's budget staff who get together, and they agree that, okay, the budget's going to grow by 2%, or it's going to grow by 1%, or it's going to drop, or whatever.
The revenues are
going to grow. Yeah, the revenues, correct. So that everybody agrees on that as they then debate where to spend the money when they craft the budget, which is the main thing that the legislature does during the 4.5 months it's in session. Well, they've had a big disagreement this month, last month. So you have the House and Senate who agreed to roll back the revenue increase estimate for the current fiscal year from just over 3% to 2.1%, and then for the next year to make it over 4%, in increase. Well, the governor isn't saying what they believe it should be, but the assumption is that his State of the State address in a couple weeks will suggest that he predicts that the state will get a little more extra money. Well, all this plays into the tax cut fight because you've got, Speaker Jones and others who really want to push a tax cut early, but at the same time, they're saying the state revenues aren't as growing as much as the governor says. So you kind of have this conflict within the Republican ranks. At the same time that actually the state revenues the last few months until December were actually lower than predicted. So this current fiscal year was shaping up to potentially not be as good as everybody thought. December was a really good month, so everyone's going to be watching to see what happens in January and February. I mean, this is a lot of numbers, but it does affect what programs get funded, who gets what, how much money goes for public education. This will influence the Medicaid discussion. I mean, these numbers do matter.
And I have in my notes here, there's another part of this whole plot, and that is there are certain legislators who want to change the governor's budget authority and change the ability he has to deal with the budget. Am I right on that?
Well, there has been this angst among a lot of Republicans that the governor has been withholding certain funds, even though they contend that it's kind of beyond his gubernatorial authority because of the way the revenue situation is. That would have to be done through, I think, a constitutional amendment.
Yeah,
yes, it would
be. Yeah, because yes. So far the state Supreme Court has sided with the governor. In Missouri, as in many states, the governor has a lot of power,
more
power than the president as far as controlling spending.
So any constitutional amendment would have to be approved by voters.
Does this have any traction, Terry?
No. And again, you're also talking about the wily veteran governor against the somewhat newcomer, freshman, amateurish House of Representatives.
Yeah. I have a number of things on my list here that I'd like to get to. We'll call them quick hits. If we can just get some reaction from you folks with regard to some of the other issues that are out there. In no particular order, I know that Right to Work is going to be back with us again this year. Jason?
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot of talk about, for example, how House Speaker Jones wants to put that on the ballot. But I'm immensely skeptical it could get out of the legislature, because while it might get out of the House, I predict that if it goes into the Senate, it will face an all-hands-on-deck filibuster from all the Democrats and some Republicans. Even if it just goes on the ballot, I'm not really sure labor unions want to shell out the tens of millions of dollars it would require to defeat that, and would just rather see it die than having to replay the 1970s fight where it was defeated. So sure. I'm really pessimistic that that's going to pass through the legislature. I have been for years.
Let me remind everybody, if it passed the legislature, the governor would veto it. And there certainly are not enough votes in the House or in the Senate to override a veto, because some Republicans would vote against that. So the only way it could happen is through a referendum or an initiative petition. And again, for the reasons Jason mentioned, that's problematic.
Joe, very quickly.
Well, it may get through the House, because what I'm being told is that Jones would like to see it get through the House so he could then tell his base, as he looks at running for something in 2016, I did get it through the House. And just for listeners, Right to Work would bar unions and employers from requiring union membership in a workplace and paying dues if a majority votes to form a union.
Okay. The next note on my list here, criminal code revision. It was brought forth last year, did not pass. Are we going to get a change in the criminal code, Terry?
Again, this depends. This is more inside baseball or inside legal stuff. And these issues, like changing the code, tend to fly beneath the screen. And if the prosecutors of Missouri and the judges of Missouri and the defense bar all agree on it, or at least have majorities, then it happens. Otherwise, it doesn't.
But I thought they had that kind of support, Joe, last year.
Yeah, well, a lot of it depends on other issues. I mean, if the legislature gets through other stuff, then they'll focus on this. Otherwise, this is going to be something that shows up the last week or two as they're voting on tons of stuff, and then you don't know. I mean, it's really unpredictable whether or not he gets passed.
And there's practical considerations with that. From what I remember, like physically, it's a very large bill because they're changing so many different aspects of it. So that's why I think this has been a two-year process on that.
There's a potential to save a lot of money, though, if the revisions are done properly. Keep a lot of people out of penitentiaries and jails, and that's a big saving.
It would be, particularly for nonviolent crimes.
Exactly. Okay, voter ID. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, that's another issue that will get vetoed by the governor and would have to go to the ballot. And, you know, they actually, I think, almost came close to putting it on the ballot a couple years ago, but it got struck down by a court for procedural reasons. And it's just a really tough procedural path for as long as Governor Nixon is there. I think the more likely scenario is that type of thing would get passed with a Republican governor in, you know, anywhere from 2 to 10 years from now, depending on what happens in 2016.
Well, it got passed, you know, it got passed when Matt Blunt was governor, but then it got tossed out by the state Supreme Court. So it would have to be a constitutional amendment. I mean, so it's a little more complicated than just thrown it out there. Again, there might be a House vote because, again, you got people who are trying to put themselves in a position to look good for 2016. And you have some Republicans who really would like to see this requirement in place by 2016. But in Missouri, that's unlikely to happen because of what Jason just said.
Okay. Abortion, the perennial in one form or another. Are we looking at more proposed legislation?
Probably. And I think, again, this is something that in some ways Republicans want to put the governor on the hot seat on that because the governor is for abortion rights but tends to play that down because Missouri is rather polarized on this. And it's interesting to me that abortion or reproductive rights, unlike gay rights, has continued to be a target, whereas, the LGBT community has had much more success in kind of changing public opinion on that, which I think is rather intriguing, something nationally, and it's happening in Missouri as well.
And the other thing that should be noted is there's been a lot of legislation passed over the last few years to curtail abortion rights. And usually, although not exclusively, Governor Nixon has usually let them go into effect without his signature. So if it's something that's really kind of controversial, maybe he would veto it, especially now that he has a second term. But sometimes the majorities are so large, it's just not really worth the fight.
Let's take a quick call from Elizabeth, who's patiently waited in St. Louis County. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Yes. I just want to ask about ALEC. Someone mentioned ALEC, which is the American Legislative Executive Council. It's a right-wing lobbying group funded primarily by the billionaire Koch brothers, who are not on the side of the environment, not on the side of unions or the poor, or even the middle class, but basically want low taxes for their wealthy. And that's my comment. Thank you.
All right, Elizabeth, thanks so much for the call.
ALEC has become a force in state legislatures. They've focused on preparing model legislation for conservative causes so that you don't have to – you have, in effect, your own think tank that you can borrow from. And they've had quite a bit of success around the country.
In the 2 minutes we have left, this leads us right into the next subject, which will get some attention this year, and that is the issue of ethics and campaign finance, lobbying, lobbyists, and that sort of thing. Where are we going this year on that, Joe?
Well, there may be some sort of bill. Secretary of State Jason Kander, who is supposed to be in our podcast later today.
In 1 hour.
just so people know. Has been among the proponents, as is the governor. The governor's been pushing some of this stuff. You have some Republicans who agree, who would like to see some changes. But there's some who want ethics reform, so there's some restrictions on lobbyists. Then there's some who want to expand it to include reinstatement of some sort of campaign donation limits, of which Republicans have generally opposed that.
And the clock is ticking on this issue. Right as Joe mentioned, governor is supportive of campaign finance limits, but let's just say Attorney General Koster becomes governor, he's on record as opposing campaign finance limits. So they may either get this done through the legislature or through the initiative petitioner. That issue might be gone for a while.
And there, Terry, go ahead.
Rhetoric, not action. There's all sorts of reasons that one can put forward, including it's an election year, why we're not going to see limits on campaign contributions.
Well, I think it's fairly clear that what we're looking at is not a lackluster session, that there's an awful lot going on. And as Joe and the rest of you have pointed out, a lot going on behind the scenes that will influence what we see and what we don't see. But here we go again. Any final thoughts in our 30 seconds or so that we have left, Terry?
Stay tuned. It's going to be an interesting session.
Right. Joe?
Yeah, well, just, read our stories on the STL radio, the public radio website, and also your show, among some others that really provide a lot of information.
All right, Jason?
I'm sure that there will be plenty of seersucker suits in the Missouri Senate to be worn, which will horrify many fashionistas.
All right, that's Jason Rosenbaum. He joins us from St. Louis Public Radio and The Beacon, as does Joe Manis from the same organization, our organization. Thank you for being with us. And Terry Jones of the University of Missouri, St. Louis, always a pleasure seeing you. Thank you so much for being with us. Now we look to tomorrow, and tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about the phase-out of the most popular light in the country, 40- and 60-watt incandescent light bulbs. The phase-out is due to a 2007 federal law designed to increase energy efficiency standards. Have you already switched to LEDs or CFLs? These terms may not be familiar to you yet, but they'll become more so. Or are you planning to stockpile incandescents? Let us know by sending an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.